This morning we were talking about the development of samatha, and I think as many people have the idea that samatha is necessary for understanding. Could you please tell more about all this so that there's more understanding?
Samatha is calmness. In Pali it's pasadi chetasika. At any moment of kusala, no matter it's a moment of generosity or metta, kindness or respect or understanding, at those moments of any kind of wholesomeness, there is calm at that moment. It's not that anyone tries to be calm or tries to do anything, because as we discussed, no one who can do anything, but it is the nature of wholesome cheetahs that they are always accompanied by calmness. This is regardless of whether there is any understanding or not. If we're talking about the development of understanding in Pali Bhavana, which is often translated as meditation, but this is not a good translation because Bhavana means the development of understanding. There are two kinds of bhavana. One kind of bhavana is the development of understanding of realities that we've discussed a lot in the last few days. And the understanding of realities was taught by the Buddha. Without the Buddha's teachings, it's impossible to understand anything about realities as not self, as anatta. So the development of this kind of understanding of realities is called vipassana bhavana, and it is unique to the Buddha's teaching. What we have been discussing when we talk about hardness, seeing, visible object, different realities, is the intellectual understanding which leads to vipassana bhavana, the development of understanding of realities. The other kind of bhavana is samatha bhavana. This is the development of calm, which has to be with understanding, but it is not the understanding of realities. When there is the understanding of realities, actually samatha, calm, is developed with it, because there cannot be understanding of realities without calm. And in fact, it is a higher kind of calm, because it's the calm associated with understanding dharmas as anatta. The other kind, samatha bhavana, was known before the Buddha. It was known to people at that time who had developed calm with understanding of the object of calm, the subject of calm, and the nature of calm, and the danger of attachment to sense impressions. This kind of calm, which leads to jhana, was known before the Buddha's time. It doesn't need a Buddha to teach it, because it's not the understanding of realities as not self. It's the understanding of how that particular subject matter can bring calm through understanding the danger of attachment to sense objects. But what the Buddha realized before the Buddha taught the Four Noble Truths, people thought this high development of calm to jhanas was the highest wisdom available. But the Buddha taught that however great the jhana, it will lead to rebirth. And even if that rebirth is in a Brahma realm that will last for an incredibly long time, sooner or later it will come to an end and there will be life again in other realms, human realms, animal realms. It's not an end of dukkha. It's not an end of suffering. So this is the development of samatha bhavana. And this morning we mentioned about some of the subjects which are the object of samatha bhavana, such as recollection of death, or recollection of metta, or recollection of generosity. And some of those subjects which can be recollected in the development of calm can be developed all the way to jhana. if it's just one object, which can be the object of the citta, but if it's a subject matter that needs contemplation or thinking, like Buddha, Dharma, Sangha, or death, or generosity, or morality, it can only be developed to the level of upachara, samadhi, access, concentration. And your question, I just checked, so the 10 of the 40 subject matters can only be developed as far as upachara. 8 recollections, Buddha, Dharma, and Sangha, morality, generosity, devas, death, and peace, because they all need contemplation, discursive thinking. Others, including metta, can be the subject matter of jhana citta for those who have that skill. But anyway, this is a small detail. The point is that even in daily life, there can be understanding and calmness, which is not the understanding of reality, but for example, at a moment when there is kindness or metta to others, and there may be reflection on that quality of metta, and at that moment there is calmness, and there may be understanding of the value or purity of metta. At that moment, it is understanding of calmness, understanding of that quality, even though it's not the understanding of reality as anatta. So this is a different kind of understanding. But again, no one who can follow anything, no one who can practice, no one who can make it arise. So we were just talking a little bit more about different subject matters of calm, and I think Gern also had some. Why don't you continue with yours?
Because knowing many people who have some kind of practice, meditation practice, and some of them report experiences of light and so on. And could you please, and they believe that because they experience light, and in the Visuddhimagga, is it described as part of the progress to the jhana? So could you please explain about in what way light can be a sign of progress, in what way is it not?
For it to be any object or subject of calmness, there has to be understanding. If one just closes one's eyes and focuses on light or reflects on light, then concentration is there. But with no understanding, it is wrong concentration and motivated by an idea of self again, who just wishes to focus or wishes to concentrate. But now, for example, perhaps there can be just naturally reflection that actually what is seen is just that which is visible. And if there is no light, then there's no idea, there cannot be any idea of shapes and forms and colors and flowers, all the things we find so important in life. Actually, what is seen is just visible. How ridiculous, really, to have so much attachment to just that which is visible that passes away instantly. Like we all enjoy looking at sunsets and beautiful lakes and trees, but actually it's only visible object that's seen. So when there is a moment of reflecting wisely that it's just that which is seen and without light, no idea at all about sunrises, sunsets, beautiful landscapes, no thinking about the beautiful visions and so on, they can be calm at that very moment of reflecting that life at this moment is just a moment of experiencing that which is seen. So whatever the subject matter, and there are 40 subject matters in the development of the understanding of calm, it has to be with understanding from the very beginning, not just closing one's eyes and concentrating and hoping to be calm, because what is taken for calm is usually attachment or ignorance.
And that reflection that Sarah mentioned on light, that can occur now in daily life if one is so inclined, if one has considered it, if one sees the relevance and importance of it, just like the reflection on earth element as represented by a casino. And it's if one has that inclination to have that kind of reflection that later there may be a mental image of light or earth element. It's not a matter of concentrating until light appears and then wondering what about it, because the concentration per se is not the development of samatha. Concentration is neither wholesome or unwholesome. It's the way the subject matter is contemplated that may have the wholesome nature that is then developed. The understanding has to lead the way, not the concentrating on the subject matter or image.
So in other words, can we say that even if the so-called meditator experiences like nibbita as light, it can still be micchya samadhi?
That experience in itself is nothing. The experiencing of an image of light means nothing in itself.
And when we were discussing yesterday evening, you mentioned stillness, because many people mention stillness. Would you say what they mean by it?
Actually, I never asked them very precise questions to clarify about that. So I don't know whether if Graham or Linda, if you would like to share anything about this, or...
I think yesterday evening also Gung mentioned that you had some discussion also on this topic over dinner, and I think he can help. He's busy at the moment, but he said also it was a topic he wished to bring up today. So any comments from your discussion on calmness or concentration?
Yes, as you were speaking just now on the topic of concentration, it was clarifying to realize that concentration leading to contemplation or discussion about an object or an experience that has been seen or had is of no use in terms of creating greater understanding. And yet, clearly, contemplation and discussion can be helpful. Could you clarify a bit more about how that discussion or that clarification or contemplation could continue without what we normally do, which is actually talking about whatever it is we think we've seen or understood and so on?
One has to consider, first of all, as Sarah said, in the case of light, what it represents for us. So it is light that makes apparent the world as we experience it. Without light, there'd be no visible object seen, so nothing to be attached to. Likewise, with the earth element, which in the terms we're talking about is referred to as a casina, earth casina. The earth casina just represents the earth element. Everything that we can touch in this world is the earth element. It's the earth element that constitutes or that makes up what we take for our possessions, our country. It's the earth element that people go to war over. That's just an example of the way that these things can be contemplated. That contemplation can be wholesome. And it's if there is wholesome contemplation that one can refer to the possibility of the development of samatha, because that wholesome contemplation is accompanied by calm. That kind of contemplation can lead to greater concentration on the subject matter.
Right. Yes.
But it's that understanding And this is different from the understanding of realities that we've been talking about on the other days. It's an understanding about what can condition wholesome moments to arise.
Thank you. Yeah, no, that's good. So the concentration and the contemplation, if that was to occur without attachment or aversion, then that's useful.
Contemplation is wholesome. Mm. Then, regardless of the level of concentration, yep. It's wholesomeness.
Okay. Yeah. Right.
But some may see the value in developing that further.
Right.
We are more concerned with the understanding of realities.
Mm.
That kind of contemplation and development of the subject matter of light or earth element, for example,
yeah.
Doesn't lead out of samsara. It doesn't lead to the end of suffering.
Yes. Yeah, yeah. Okay.
A lot of people think that a certain level of that kind of concentration is necessary before there can be the beginning of the development of understanding realities.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But that is not the case.
Not the case, no.
The other point to mention at this stage, only in passing perhaps, is that if there is the development of understanding realities, then there's development of all kinds of wholesomeness, including samatha.
Mm.
Because it is the highest level of wholesomeness, that understanding, and it brings with it all other kinds of wholesome development.
Right.
And the different kinds of wholesome development, such as generosity, good conduct,
mm-hmm.
and these other qualities, metta,
respect,
etc.,
They
can be developed only so far by the person who doesn't understand about realities. But
right.
It's the development of understanding realities that brings those other qualities to perfection.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Good. Thank you.
Yeah. I think yesterday we has been discussion about the being at the present moment. As we has had a dinner together, just three of us. Then Linda, I think you should give us some idea about that. Then we can discussion together. Then I just tell that is the being at the present moment. We are trying to be at here, because the present moment here seems a lot of moment arise and fall away at that long term of present, not just very present moment. And please help to elaborate a little more about that.
There are two questions. One is, when there is an idea of being at the present moment, who is being at the present moment? Is there an idea of someone being at the present moment? And the other point, as Geng mentioned, is what is the present moment? Because we may have an idea that being at the present moment means like now we're sitting at the table having a discussion. But actually, in reality, there are moments of seeing, moments of hearing, moments of thinking. So is seeing being at the present moment, or is hearing being at the present moment? Actually, when seeing arises, it's always only at the present moment. When hearing arises, because life only exists in the moment, it's always at the present moment. And each moment of thinking can only arise at the present moment. The thinking a moment ago has gone. The thinking not yet come hasn't come. So no one is actually being. There is no being of anyone at the present moment. There are just different realities which arise at the present moment and fall away instantly. But sometimes we might talk about, living at the present moment, and it's like just a conventional term. We're not trying to be literal, I know. But when there is more consideration about realities, then it's clear that actually each reality can only arise at the present moment. But I think that perhaps what you mean is that usually, even though there is just one citta arising at the present moment, nothing is known, because perhaps there's thinking about the past or thinking about the future. There's no awareness or no understanding now. So in this sense, we can agree that when awareness and understanding develop, it has to be now of what appears now, because it cannot understand or be aware of what happened yesterday or a moment ago. So if there's attachment now, there can be awareness of attachment now. Usually one's so lost in the story of attachment, there's no idea that the reality at this moment is attachment. So it's just a way of being a little bit more precise and considering a little bit more what is the object of awareness or what is the object of understanding. So just by considering more about the details, it helps to understand that they are just these different realities that arise at the moment, not anyone at all. Does that make sense, Linda?
Yes. It cannot be so precise yet, because there are different levels of understanding, the intellectual understanding of the present moment, pariyatti, and that can condition later on patipatti or satipatthana, and that is for the direct understanding. So we cannot expect it to be yet the direct understanding, which is much more precise. But there is a beginning of understanding different realities, that seeing is not hearing, and there arise at different moments, and little by little we get used to that, and pariyatti can grow little by little until it can condition patipatti or satipatthana, direct awareness and understanding.
When we talk about being in the present moment, it's a slightly vague term. For some people it means not thinking about anything but the present moment, which strikes me as being not particularly useful, because we all have to plan the day, or we may reflect on the previous day. It's really the quality of the mental state that's important rather than the object of thinking. The object of thinking has no moral quality to it, whereas the moment of consciousness that thinks does. It can be wholesome or unwholesome. If the moment of consciousness is wholesome, it doesn't really matter whether one is what is called being in the present moment perfectly or not. So I think in your morning reflection, which you find useful for a day, as you described the other day, there may be reflection or thinking about a number of things, but it's, from your point of view, the calmness that comes from that and the focus on the matter at hand that is the benefit. But we would say what is of most benefit at any moment is a wholesome mental state.
So could I come back to what I think I understood Nina was saying about the more direct or completely direct understanding of reality, which you call patipatti, or there was another term, the third level. Yeah. So if we're looking at intellectual understanding, which is, I suppose, not direct understanding of seeing or hearing or of a reality, right? How is any kind of contemplation or discussion about an intellectual or non-direct understanding of a reality, how is that helpful, and how should it be conducted?
It is very helpful, because usually we are thinking about stories and things which are not so important in daily life. And then we discuss now, we talk now about seeing and hearing and attachment and aversion and ignorance. And we a little more, we are learning that there is so much ignorance and we never knew that before, that it's because of the Buddha's teachings only that we know that we are so ignorant. And then we have questions and doubts, and the discussion really helps. Because this at lunchtime, I asked Ajahn something. She says, sometimes life is so short. And then I realized that when I hear that, there is some aversion or fear. I'm so old. And then I said, little trying, just a little. And before I never knew about that, but I heard quite a lot of many times that always the lower comes in and tries a little to know, and it's very good to be reminded that it is so true. And Ajahn said to me, well, little by little, it's only Panya that can know ignorance. So I found that so useful and beneficial to remember that. Yeah.
Could you remind me what Panya is?
Well, officially it's...
Officially.
Understanding.
Understanding, okay, thank you.
It's the opposite of ignorance.
Right.
So now it's ignorance of many, many things. So we are distracted and we think of the cups and the food or anything else. But we know there are so many moments of attachment, and that's always accompanied by ignorance or a little aversion or fear or worry, and that is always accompanied by ignorance, or only jitta's rooted in ignorance only, doesn't know anything at all. And then we learn a little about seeing, that seeing is not seeing people or things, because that is already thinking, and that shows us how fast cheetahs rise and pass away. It seems one moment only, but now we learn there are different moments, so it helps us to understand better how fast cheetahs arise and fall away, and there is so much that we are misleading ourselves, and we think it's seeing, but it's not, it's already thinking.
Yeah, that's good. So my experience seems to accord with your description of when, for example, you are in conversation with someone and something you said, your example of Ajahn saying this life is so short, and you recognize that some form of aversion arises.
Right.
Yeah. So that's good. Yeah. So I can relate to that because I have the same experience. And of course, it appears that then one has a choice as to whether to pay attention to that or not. Appears. I only say appear.
Never a choice, because it's all right. By conditions.
Okay,
so
okay.
There is no one who can choose or select anything.
Right.
It just happened by conditions.
Yeah. So for the aversion, to have no impact on your seeing or your hearing, that is only by understanding that happens, right? And that the level of one's, shall I call, development dictates whether the understanding arises or whether the attachment, the aversion, is what then directs what happens next. Is that correct?
And it shows how very useful discussion is. So if we have something that we doubt about, it's better to say it and discuss it.
Completely, yeah. Thank you.
But in that example, the norm is for there to be aversion. And it's not that the aversion has to be stopped. There are accumulated tendencies that will condition aversion to arise in that situation. Just like when one tastes something that one likes, there'll be attachment. So we don't say that there has to be no unwholesome reaction. The key thing that Buddha spoke about was to understand different realities, and understanding being conditioned will arise if one has heard about the development of this understanding and what can be its object. But there cannot be any choice as to which object the understanding will take. So when we say there's no choice, what is meant is that if there's the inclination to choose, one is missing the point. The inclination arises because that's another accumulated tendency that we have, but it's not a helpful one. We understand that hearing about these things in discussions like this can condition useful reflection, which may in turn condition some understanding, but there's no knowing when that understanding might arise and what object it will take.
Yeah, no, that's good. That makes a lot of sense, that it's not important whether aversion or whatever arises, right? And it's also not true that I can do anything about that, right?
And it's also true that that aversion is not my aversion,
yes,
or Nina's aversion or your aversion.
Thank you.
It's just a dharma that arises for an instant, yeah, and passes away.
Right. And would it be true to say that the aversion will continue to arise if I continue to think that this is my aversion and I need to do something about it? Will that have any impact
on it? It'll be aversion to the aversion.
Aversion, exactly. Yes.
But
doesn't really matter. There are all realities in their condition, and we don't try to change anything at all. Perhaps we dislike some realities and we would rather not have them. But no, they're all dhammas, only dhammas. So more understanding, very little by little can be developed.
Also, it should be understood that having the idea that it's my aversion and I can do something about it is worse than having the aversion continue, because having the wrong idea about the way things are is the worst form of unwholesomeness and the most difficult to be overcome, because it masquerades as thinking it's right.
It's a form of ignorance which is hard to beat, right?
Well, we do distinguish between ignorance, which doesn't know anything at all, and wrong understanding, which thinks it knows something but is wrong, and the latter is more dangerous in a sense than the former, although it is said that it's ignorance that is the key, is the start of the chain of events that keeps us being reborn life after life.
I have a couple of questions from the Vietnamese corner at the back. This is from Mai's mother. I hope she is there. Yesterday, Ajahn, we had a lot of discussion about how there can be understanding any time, any place, without selection, without any rules, without any should-bes. But at the end of the discussion, you said there should be virya, energy, kanti, patience, and adhitana, resolution. When she heard this, it sounded to her as though you were saying that this is something that should be done, that one should try to have virya, kanti, and adhitana, and it seemed the opposite of what we had been discussing about realities as anatta. This was one question, and her other question is that there are so many different realities. Which one should be followed?
It all because of one's forgetfulness about all dharmas are anatta. This is the very beginning. Any time when one forgets the self and the try very much to have such and such object as object of understanding or virya, see? So if there is the very firm confidence on all dhammas, anatta, which means no self, no one at all. And by hearing just very little or superficial understanding of Dhamma, it cannot help one to get rid of the idea of self, no matter now or then or when. That's why the parami, the accumulation of all deeds, because if that moment is not kusala, it is akusa, and more akusala, because no one can have right understanding at will so great that in a day there is no akusala at all, or can select the object of understanding. That's why each word should be listened again and again, and have more understanding of all realities and Dhamma, no self at all. For example, in truth, the present moment is the moment when that reality has arisen and not falling away yet. Is that right? Each moment is that. But the arising and falling away of reality is also very rapidly. No one can understand the exact moment of that which has arisen but not fallen away yet. What appear each moment in life when there is no understanding is only the image of that which arises and falls away. That's why at this moment what is seen is the image only of that which has fallen away already all the time of the same object. For example, even the feeling, when one feels sad, unhappy, it's only the image of that which has arisen and fallen away many, many moments. That's why the arising and falling away of realities are so very rapidly. Who can know that if there is no enlightenment of the Buddha and taught us to begin to know what that one lives in the world of image, experiences image all the time, taking it so real, but actually what is real is gone all the time. That's why listen carefully that all realities are Dhamma and not self. This is the beginning of to be truthful to the truth that it's quite very difficult for anyone to have such understanding, not forgetting that Dhamma, not self, what appears is only a moment, just in a moment, and then gone. At moment of seeing, there's no hearing. And at moment of hearing, there must be no seeing at all. But it doesn't seem like that, this moment, seeing and hearing simultaneously, but at the same time, exactly at the same time. So what level of understanding can begin to see that they are not self? They are conditioned realities all the time in one's life. That's why Buddha taught in detail for 45 years about everything in life to be conditioned for the accumulation of understanding little by little, to have a detachment from clinging, not as before, less and less attachment. Little by little, at this moment of understanding the truth of present moment, it is the time to see that no self is there. It's not just what can I do in order that I will have no self, no understanding of, no misunderstanding of self at all. Impossible. It's the I who'd like so much, and that is the way. That's why the teachings of the Buddha is so very deep and subtle. Understanding can understand everything. At the moment when one hears about present moment and understand the truth, that it's the moment when that reality has arisen and not fallen away yet, that is the understanding. No one, everything, even understanding at that moment is not seeing now, is not hearing now. That's why we listen carefully all the time about each word of the teachings, not for us to do this or that, to have such and such object, to try to have understanding, but to understand the reality which is taught by the Buddha. So we can see the great virtues, kindness, and great wisdom of the Buddha. Each word brings us about to understand Buddhang saranang kacchami, Dhammang saranang kacchami, and Sanghang saranang kacchami. So there can be Buddha no state now, the understanding is there. Otherwise, how can there be a reflection on the high understanding of the Buddha? See? So any moment can bring about more kusala when panya is there. But when panya is not there, it's very superficial. Think that there is understanding enough, but never enough. Until right understanding is there again and again and again of that by conditions, not by anyone else. So panya can see attachment. The other reality cannot understand attachment because it's here and now. After seeing, there's attachment, and attachment to that which is seen as a sense object, or attachment to the becoming or being at that moment, and attachment with wrong understanding, or attachment with ignorance. Who knows? But by hearing more and more, it gradually eliminates misunderstanding and the idea of self. From that which one learns, which panya begins to understand again and again and again. So each word should be studied very, very carefully. And that is panya, it's conditioned for panya. Otherwise, it's I who know this and that, who developed this and that all the time. That's why it's very easy to go wrong because of the accumulation of ignorance and attachment is so great. Just like digging the mountain with fingernail.
So usually as soon as there is an idea of following reality, it is the idea of self or someone or I who can select or choose or pick a reality to follow. And as we know, because dharmas are anatta, no one can select or follow or choose any reality. Reality arises by its own conditions and falls away. Usually after seeing or hearing arises, attachment, lobha, and ignorance follow that seeing or hearing. But through more understanding of different realities, understanding and awareness can begin to follow that seeing or hearing instead of attachment from time to time. But it's never I or someone, so there's no idea of choosing a reality to follow. And when talking about Virya, Kanti, Adhitana, these are paramis which develop with right understanding. So when it's said there should be Virya, Kanti, Adhitana, effort, patience, resolution, it doesn't mean I or someone or anyone should do anything. It just means that these are qualities that are developed with the development of right understanding. And without the support of these qualities, understanding cannot develop. So at any moment of understanding, there is right effort at that moment. It's not anyone who makes an effort. That quality of virya, right effort, is there immediately. And without kanti like now, patience to hear about the truth, patience to understand what is real at the moment, understanding cannot develop. But it's not I or someone who is patient. And adhitana, resolution, can there be the determination, the resolution at this moment that it is understanding that is most precious in life? It's not I who make a resolution, but by seeing the value of knowing the truth, adhitana is there at that moment, but not I make a resolution. I hope that's helpful.
So panya develops at moment of understanding. no one there at all. So it's not I understand, but at that moment, understanding is that it understands and it develops. So in a day when there is no understanding of whatever appears at all, it's not the moment of development of right understanding. So the development of right understanding must be the moment of understanding. But people thought that I know, I develop all the time. It hinders so much because actually, how can there be I who know and I who understand? That's why it takes longer time than anyone can think about how long it will take. For Panya itself, no one else, no reality else, which develops at moment of understanding better and better.
I heard that you mentioned that you also had a discussion about karma, and you wish to bring that up?
We discussed about the karma and the karma result. So we have to elaborate more about that. Yeah. Or you want me to? Because actually yesterday we've been discussed, I has shared a little bit, like seeing, hearing, touching here is the result of the karma. But the causes of the karma, I haven't bring it yet. And also, we have to elaborate more about that. The cause of the karma.
Even right then, can there be attachment of I to understand? See, no one can see at all because reality arises and falls away. In split second, many of them, some are unwholesome attachment and some are wisdom, right understanding. So at the moment of thinking about this and that, it's very difficult to understand. Only Panya can see whether it's attachment, desire, wanting, the eye is there to know. That's not the way to have less eye, idea of self. But in order to understand the word which Buddha taught about karma, it should be begun with, what is karma? Instead of, I would like to know more, how many karmas, how many kinds of karma, but what is karma? This is the understanding which develops any moment of understanding different aspects of realities as the self. So what is karma? Otherwise we talk about many kinds of karma, but what is karma? What is the actual
we've talked about how during life there is one citta at a time, one moment of consciousness, and each citta is accompanied by seven or more cetasikas, mental factors. And one of those mental factors or cetasikas which accompanies every citta during life is cetana. Cetana is intention, and actually that intention or cetana is karma. And at moments of result, such as seeing or hearing, the cetana has the function or role, actually at any moment of life, it has the function or role of coordinating the other mental factors and the citta to perform their tasks. So it's like the head boy or head girl in a school or the captain of a football team that organizes and coordinates the other prefects or the football team members to perform their tasks or their roles. So that is its role. So even at a moment of result, seeing or hearing, cetana is coordinating the citta and cetasikas to see the object or touch the object or whatever the role is of each cetasika. And when the cittas are kusala or akusala, wholesome or unwholesome, for example, moments of attachment or aversion, the cetana is still coordinating the other mental factors and the citta
to experience that object in a wholesome or an unwholesome way. If that attachment, for example, or understanding, if the akusala or the kusala is very strong, if the attachment is so strong that it leads to harmful deeds that hurt the other, harm the other, that karma or that chetana at that moment is capable of bringing a result later. So this is like another kind of karma condition, that only at moments of wholesomeness or unwholesomeness that have accumulated to a strong degree can they at that moment bring results later on. So actually in life there are three rounds. There's the round of result, such as rebirth, the life continuum cheetahs, seeing, hearing, smelling, tasting, touching, result cheetahs. And there is the result of, there is the round of kusala or akusala, like usually after seeing there is attachment. It's just akusala, but it's not strong enough to bring results. And when that kusala or akusala accumulates, then it is of a degree of karma that can bring a result. And so this is how life continues on. Results, wholesome, unwholesome cheetahs, and karma that can bring result. So this is in brief. So this is the circle of life and death. Results, wholesome, unwholesomeness, karma. And only when all defilements have been eradicated at the final stage of enlightenment is there no new karma that can bring results, and no more wholesome or unwholesome, kusala or akusala cheetahs that lead to the continuation of the cycle. So you asked about discussing now on the value at moments of wise considering and understanding. That understanding is a very high degree of wholesomeness, and understanding can bring its results in the future. It accumulates and it can bring more understanding and bring about wholesome results too. It leads to the direct understanding, and this is said to be a higher kind of karma, bringing more beneficial results and even great generosity or metta.
Wow. So this citta seeker that you call chetana?
Chetana, yes.
Yeah, chetana. Or intention,
yes.
You called it. And that seems to, that as far as I understand, that organizes the other mental faculties. How is this intention affected by the karma that has already been created by the soul or the individual?
So, for example, at a moment of seeing or hearing, this is result of karma. So it's not my seeing or anyone. It's a citta which sees an object. And that seeing arises with seven citta seekers, including chetana, intention. And each of those citta seekers that arise with the citta at that moment are also result of karma. If the citta is a result of karma, the citta seekers that arise with it are also the result of karma. And at that moment, the citta seekers condition each other, they affect each other, and they also affect or condition the citta. They work together as a team. In this case, they're all result. At a moment of unwholesome citta, akusala citta, the akusala citta is accompanied by more citta seekers, and again the chetana coordinates the other citta seekers and the citta. And in this case, because it's an unwholesome citta, they all condition each other in an unwholesome way. For example, if there is aversion, as we mentioned earlier, that the intention, the chetana with aversion, rounds up or coordinates the other citta seekers in a different way than when it's a wholesome citta. It coordinates them in an unwholesome way. The effort at that moment is unwholesome effort. The feeling at that moment is unpleasant. So all the citta seekers are tainted by each other. And the citta, which in itself is not wholesome or unwholesome, is tainted by the citta seekers. They give an example in the text of a parent that has naughty children, and then the parent's reputation is spoilt because of the naughty children. So the citta is spoilt or affected by the unwholesome citta seekers that arise with it, and the opposite in the case of a wholesome one.
But also it could be added that one intends according to conditions, including one's accumulated tendencies. So previous accumulations of particular tendencies tend to predispose the arising of similar wholesome or unwholesome tendencies later.
Sounds like a
vicious circle.
Can I ask where our DNA comes into this?
Thinking about it, I don't know if you would like to say anything about the DNA.
Or genes, or brain. Physical traits, or brain. Let's consider whether any of those things are real at the present moment, because intention definitely is real, seeing is real, hearing is real, thinking is real, liking or disliking is probably real, pleasant and unpleasant feeling are real. So that's the area we're talking about. We could talk about brain. We could talk about nervous system. We could talk about genes. We could talk about DNA. But they are not presently arising realities.
I understand what you're saying. They're not present arising realities. We have this body that is influenced by its DNA, genes. And we have certain strengths and certain weaknesses due to what we inherit from our parents, our grandparents, and our great-grandparents. So all of that has conditioned our human carrier.
Strengths and weaknesses, are we referring to physical or mental?
Physical.
Physical. If there is a physical weakness, it will manifest in some manner or other. Painful feeling, for example, which is real. Or limitation of a faculty, like partial blindness, for example, which is the seeing faculty.
There are other factors that are considered in tradition, including
Chinese
tradition and Indian tradition.
Yes. Now, the question is whether the ultimate condition for these things comes from our forebears or from past deeds. Because there are different ways of thinking of causative factors. Medical science has one set of them. The scientific world generally has another set. But what the Buddha taught was that there are lots of causative conditions that are totally unknown to the conventional world. And those are the ones he spoke about and explained. The scientist and the medical practitioner may be interested in the DNA or the genetic traits of the forebears, but for our purposes, there is a deeper underlying conditioning factor of the manifestation of these things. So the question that could be asked is, why are some good-looking and others not so good-looking, even from the same parents, and even in terms of strengths and weaknesses? Not the same for each offspring. So what causes the difference? There are other factors at work other than the genetic ones, the conventionally understood ones.
I haven't got the answer exactly, but one of the theories is that it's just a different combination of DNA that creates certain features and other combinations create other features.
Right.
So they've got more of one parent and less of the other.
Right.
But I was thinking of more... we live in Vietnam and traditional Chinese medicine is very strong here. So for example, if you inherit weak kidneys, you also inherit a very fearful nature. So your a natural tendency in your day-to-day is to be fearful and anxious about things. So that's more what I'm trying to get
right.
to.
Okay. I would say that's similar to what they sometimes refer to as a statistical correlation rather than a cause and effect. According to the way the Buddha taught it, a fearful nature is a tendency that's been accumulated previous lifetimes, and there are conditions for it to manifest in this lifetime.
It's a different perspective.
In the teaching about reality, what makes up what we call the body or the kidney or the brain are just groups of rupas, just groups of elements, physical phenomena that can't be any other way, that arise by different causes and different combinations and affect each other. So we might talk about a liver or a kidney or a brain, but actually in reality there's no liver or kidney or brain, just as there's no person or no table. There are just different rupas arising and falling away, which, just as some rupas come to be called flowers, other rupas come to be called a table or a kidney, but in truth there are just different groups of rupas arising and falling away. Ajahn mentioned something yesterday which I'm sure wasn't readily apparent. She was looking at her passion fruit juice and talking about the rupas, the visible object being conditioned by the Mahabhuta rupas and other rupas. So there are groups of rupas in each group, minimum of 8 rupas, including the 4 great rupas, that is solidity, temperature, water or cohesion, and air element, plus another 4 rupas that always arise together in a group, and sometimes more rupas. So the visible object that's seen now is conditioned by the other rupas that arise together in that group. That's why each visible object is different, and that's why memory of one kind of visible object leads to thinking about shapes, forms, colors, and lilies. But other visible objects, because of memory of other visible objects, there comes to be the thinking about tables or brain or people. From this perspective, there are different groups of rupas. So hardness is a rupa, visible object is a rupa. These are rupas that can be directly known. And in the body, there are just different groups of rupas that come to be known as heart or liver or kidney, but actually there is no liver, there is no kidney, there are just these groups of rupas. And the Buddha taught that the rupas outside the body are conditioned by temperature, but the rupas inside the body are conditioned by either karma, nutritive essence. For example, if we don't eat, there is no nutriment, the bodies cannot continue. Temperature and citta, thank you, someone. So at a moment of thinking, like the rupas of the hand gesticulating, are conditioned by citta. Sometimes one might think of something embarrassing and blush. One can see the rupas are conditioned by citta. So rupas are conditioned in these different ways, and they condition each other. So it's a way of talking about the realities as that cannot be divided further. Solid hardness cannot be divided into any smaller unit because it's a reality and it can never be altered or changed by. So whereas the perspective of scientists can change over the years and can be reanalyzed, but the realities that the Buddha taught can never be changed or altered. So it is a different way of looking at things, and it's a way of looking at what can be tested and proved through the development of understanding.
Do you have anything to add? Because
science is not wrong, and continue to study it, but the purpose is quite different. Because the Buddha's teaching about upas, the only aim is detachment and not taking it for something that stays or that is self. And the purpose of science is really quite different. It is not leading to detachment. That is the great difference.
So you're saying basically we're leaving that aside and we're dealing with the present moment and developing right thinking.
And
in the process of that if we do happen to physically have weak kidneys and a lot of fear and anxiety, that will, we've got the choice, well, not the choice, but there's the that can change with awareness and right thinking.
Can I just say that I'm a great believer in traditional Chinese medicine myself, have been for many decades, and they have some great understanding of the way the body works at a conventional level. But as I said, the Buddha taught that there are causes and conditions that are not apparent to us, that can become known only by learning more about the present moment reality. Yes, we do leave aside that, but in the example you gave of the weak kidney leading to the fearful temperament, then one could ask, well, what conditioned the weak kidney in the first place? Was it past karma that conditioned that, for example? We don't know. And it's pointless, I think, to try and trace those things back. It's enough to say, okay, TCM finds that correlation, so they treat it accordingly. And I guess sometimes it works, the treatment, and sometimes it doesn't. And that's the nature of medical practice, as far as I know. But we come back to the reality of the present moment as being something more important and more fundamental than that, because we're talking about what is the path to enlightenment.
And we also learn, for example, if we're talking about fear or fearfulness, that it's a kind of aversion that we were talking about, and that aversion, any kind of aversion, is conditioned by ignorance and attachment. If there's not attachment to having things a particular way, there's not fearfulness when it's not that way, and it is an accumulated tendency. But the one who has reached certain stage of enlightenment has no more fear, no matter the kidneys are weak or not. So it is a tendency that is conditioned by ignorance and attachment. And so even though, like you, I might well go to see an acupuncturist if I'm having a problem or a difficulty, so it's not any suggestion that this is not useful, but from the perspective of understanding realities, it is a reality to be understood as not my fear, not my aversion, as a passing dharma, and that it's not the snake or whatever is the object of fear that is the problem, but it is that accumulated tendency conditioned by the clinging to oneself and the ignorance of life. So it's just a different approach and a way of understanding.
I appreciate that. Thank you.
And if there is no thinking, can there be the idea and story of Jean? If there is no thinking, can there be the idea or story of Jean?
I've heard about some teachers who explained about anattaness in this way. For example, we eat rice in order to survive. So the rice is part of us. And in order to have the rice, there should be the people involved in planting the rice and, you know, growing the rice. So in the rice, there's also the part of other people. So everyone is interdependent. So that is the explanation of the meaning of anattaness. So would you please comment about this?
what you said sounded more like a description of utterness than unutterness to me. People in the rice.
Because all it's about concepts, not about realities.
It's not any understanding of realities as anatta, and it is the realities which are anatta that are to be understood. So however much one thinks about brain or DNA or kidney or rice, it will never lead to the understanding of the truth of realities now. And that is why scientists can never understand the truth, however great the microscopes are, no matter how great the scientific research is. It will never lead any closer to understanding reality at this moment.
As far as I know, the term anatta, as used by the Buddha, relates to dhammas only. I don't know if it appears in any other context. Characteristic of dhammas.
So that's why when I heard about that explanation of anattaness, it sounded very strange to me, and I don't know where that was based upon.
So I just wanted to follow up a bit on this, the accumulations that you were talking about in relationship to Linda's question. So accumulations have happened. Accumulation is, right, so
tendencies have been accumulated. Past moments of wholesome and unwholesome tendencies have been accumulated.
Right, so the tendency to be fearful has been accumulated. Do tendencies, as understanding improves, do tendencies lessen?
If someone thinks that because now they've heard and considered about seeing an visible object that there won't be so much fearfulness, this would be an expectation that wouldn't be helpful. But what one can say is, as understanding develops, it leads to the development of all kinds of wholesomeness gradually. For example, why be mad with someone when it's just sound that's heard or visible object that's seen? And what about friendliness to whoever one's with, no matter the circumstances? So the understanding leads to more kinds of kusala, but without any expectation. And because those unwholesome tendencies have been ingrained and accumulated for so long, not just this lifetime, but lifetime after lifetime, it doesn't mean that suddenly there's not going to be any fearfulness or anything like that. Even the one who has developed such highly developed understanding that they've become a sotapanna still can have great attachment, great fear, great disappointment. So without expectation, but it is the development of right understanding that eventually leads to the eradication of all kinds of unwholesomeness.
Right.
Just add a bit to that, that as wholesome tendencies are developed, then the unwholesome tendencies can appear to arise less often.
Right.
But they're not less
gone.
They're still accumulated. And we also need to bear in mind that at different stages of life, different kinds of wholesome and unwholesome tendencies tend to predominate or are more apparent than others. Like as one grows up, goes through life, hedonistic or tendencies, or being cranky
or
worrisome or fearful or whatever. So there are a number of conditioning factors that have a bearing on what tendencies will manifest. But all kinds of wholesome and unwholesome tendencies have been accumulated in the past. Some may be conditioned to arise more than others in different lifetimes, depending on factors such as the society one was born into, or the kind of family, or the upbringing, and stuff like that.
So would it be fair to say that quite simply, when there is more wholesomeness, then the citta seekers are going to operate differently?
So for example, at a moment of generosity,
yes,
there is the generosity chetasika, and it's accompanied by other chetasikas that all operate in a wholesome way at that moment. There is awareness which remembers not to be unwholesome at that moment. There is the intention which intends in a wholesome way. There's the effort which is wholesome. So they all operate together in a wholesome way at that time. So what you've been hearing about or learning about this afternoon is we talk about all realities being conditioned, and you've actually been hearing or learning about several of those conditions. You've been hearing about karma condition, you've been hearing about the accumulation condition, which is another one. You've been hearing about conascence condition, about how citta and cetasikas condition each other together, and how the rupas condition each other together. You've been hearing about conditions for rupas. So hearing or considering more about these different conditions is the way to understand that these realities arise by particular causes.
Very quick question. In the science, they know that there is the conditioned reflect and unconditional reflect. Let's say, for example, unconditional reflect, like if the strong light steer to the eyes, and then immediately reflect like close the eyes to protect, then what is that the realities? And the conditional reflex suggests swimming. We need to practice and need to do something to be able to swim, right? Then some condition, let's say on the boat, it sinks, then we automatically just swim. Then what just condition, like thinking of them?
But in terms of realities, there are just different realities arising by different conditions. For example, what is conventionally called reflex or unconditional reflex. Actually, there is that condition at that moment. If there wasn't the light, then there wouldn't be that reaction. So, in fact, each moment of seeing, each moment of blinking, each moment of touching is conditioned in different ways. And when we talk about swimming, this is not reality. There's so many different realities involved, each one conditioned in very specific ways.
Seem no need thinking, but there are a lot of thinking arise, right? No.
Each moment of thinking is conditioned.
Yeah, sure.
And it depends, you know, like for humans, we need to learn how to swim, but for fish, they don't need to learn how to swim. So it's just different conditions at different times.
For fish, it can call that the unconditional, because it belongs to the human being or the animal, or that it depends, not for human, that,
yeah.
Like what I said,
so
the light.
So automatically.
Automatic.
There's no
unconditional.
It's always conditioned.
Like even now when you're blinking, you would call that unconditional reflex. But actually, it's conditioned by citta and other causes. Each moment of life, each reality is conditioned.